Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Cariad Lloyd. Griefcast is a place to talk, share and laugh about the peculiar human process of death and grief. Each week, I talk to a different person about their experiences of grief and death as we remember someone that they have lost along the way, whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club. Welcome to Griefcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cariad Lloyd's Griefcast. Vocal track. Recording. Now I'm going to call up the invite. Oh, shit, I'm late. Oh, shit, I'm 1 minute late. Oh, are you okay to do 11:45? Sorry, hope that's okay. That's fine, Cariad. Fucking messing me around like I'm not important. I am important! I'm important! I'll reply to Cariad. What'll I put? Hope that's okay. Yes. No, I'm going to go for sure. Sure. No problem. Kiss, kiss, kiss. Three kisses. One big kiss. Hug. No, that's too many kisses. A with a kiss. Oh, that's very relaxed. Sure, no problem, Cariad. Hey, that's cool. All right, send. It's gone. All right. Back in 15 minutes then, I guess.
Hey, Griefsters. I think you can probably guess who this week's guest is from that excellent ramble that he just did. I was going to go straight into the show, but obviously I normally say, I hope you're having an okay week. What a week to ask that question. If you are listening from England, we're about to go into our second lockdown. I think Scotland is as well. I know Wales is already in it. I just want to send you, some chocolate and some love and a hug. Because I know if you are grieving in any way, this is really tough. And this time of year is tough anyway, because it's dark and cold and we're heading up for lots of religious festivals that might be important or just family time. So yeah, I normally save it for the end of the show, but I just want to say you are not alone. So he is our second returning guest. He is the incredible Adam Buxton. I'm sure you know him. He's the king of podcasts in this country. He's just an incredible, hilarious human. If you haven't listened to his podcast, you're not doing podcasts right, is what I would say. And it's a bit of a weird one with Griefcast, because obviously if somebody comes back on, it's because something else has happened. So I feel obviously slightly bittersweet, but it was, as ever, just a total joy to speak to him. If you have listened to the show from the beginning, you know he was our first episode. He came in to talk to me about his dad, who'd very recently passed away when he came to talk to me. And this episode, Adam is talking about his mum, who passed away during lockdown. I'm just so grateful that he exists, because his podcast is a thing of joy that will make this next few weeks slightly more bearable, and that he was willing to come and talk to me and share his story again. So thank you, Adam, and I hope you enjoy the show.
There was a period where we were quite enjoying ourselves as a family. I have three children, a wife and a dog, and we made an effort to eat together, and actually which we used to be quite bad at doing. Like, it used to be a few days would go by and we wouldn't really have seen each other. But actually, at the beginning of this year, we made a conscious effort, like, this is crazy. We've got to stop ourselves disappearing off into our own caves every time we're at home. And we've at least got to come together and sit down for a proper meal. And so we did that, and we were in that habit by the time the lockdown was announced in March. So that was good. But then my mum died, and that was bad. And it all started going wrong in the build-up to that event. She died at the end of May. And for the towards the end of April and the beginning of May, I started getting really worried about her. And I'd been speaking to her fairly regularly and checking up on her. And she was always insistent that she was fine. She was on her own.
And she doesn't live super near, does she? Where does she?
No. She lives down outside Reading. Okay, yeah, yeah. State she lives. I'm still thinking in the present. But yeah, she had a house in outside Reading in this little chocolate boxy village. She kept on insisting that she was fine. Stop fussing. I get the feeling that you think I'm doing very badly, but I'm not. I'm fine, and I wish you would stop fussing. And at first I would think, okay, I'll just need to persevere, and then she'll chill out and she'll be able to accept my concern and my help, and she will maybe respond to some of my more practical suggestions. But she never did. She was just so determined to plow on and not be a burden and don't fuss and I'm fine. And I should have been more worried than I was. But, you know, the reality was, like, there seemed to be so much else going down that if she was telling me she was fine, I was happy to go along with it. You know what I mean?
It's very, very difficult with that parent-child relationship obviously I understand, you know, you are in a situation, she's passed away, and you are in that very early bit where you're going through all the things that could have and all those doors that you chose to take. So I understand that process. But I also think, say you had gone, no, I'm coming down now, like, maybe that would have angered her and upset her, because you have, as a parent, like, it's so hard, isn't it? Like, when they do say, leave me alone, I'm fine, part of you sort of has to sometimes go, okay, well, that's the version you want to be true. So I can't be like, because they're not a child. They're not, even though you are, that relationship is changing. Do you have brothers and sisters as well?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
All right, yeah.
I'm the oldest.
Right, yeah. It's difficult, isn't it? I find that change. I'm sort of in that process at the moment. My mum would be so offended. But, like, you know, she's getting older, and there is that more, you're moving into that period where, like, I might ring my brother and be like, she said that. Is that, do you think that's all right? Like, she said she did. And it's a weird change, isn't it, where the dynamic is, oh, I am being a bit more, are you okay? But it sounds like you asked, you tried. If somebody is like, I'm fine, what can you do?
Yeah, no, it's a real balancing act, because it is, in a way, I worry that sometimes you can be a little bit narcissistic, sort of thinking that everybody needs your help and it's all like, they're just waiting for me to come and sort them out. And no, people value their independence, and you have to respect that. The thing was, I suppose, that she'd been deteriorating for a couple of years. She started losing her memory. Well, I became aware that she was losing her memory about 3 years ago, I suppose. And she had cancer, you know, she got breast cancer about a decade ago, but then seemed to recover and be in remission, and it was all fine. And then she got a tumor on her skull about 5 years ago, but she was all like, it's fine, it's not life-threatening, I'm doing, the NHS are great, they're so nice, I'm doing chemo and I'm on pills and it's all good. It's not a bad tumor. It's one of the best tumors. I was like, okay. And again, you know, you're like, well, good. Are you sure? You're not just saying that to make me happy. No, I'm fine. It's all fine. And I was like, okay, all right. So I thought it was all under control, but evidently, I think it was just wearing her down in all sorts of ways, and she was slowing down, and then her memory started going. I don't know if that was related to the tumor or not. And I was trying to establish all these things. You know, I was trying to get her tested at the memory clinic and all this kind of thing, but it's hard to do it remotely, even before lockdown, you know.
Yeah.
And coordinate with them, and then, you know, you'd get an appointment, you have to wait 6 months for an appointment, you get the appointment, and then they sort of say, oh, no, she's fine. And I'm like,
yeah. Well,
how, really? I mean, her memory's not that great. And they're like, no, she's fine. And she says she's fine. I'm like, you fell for the, yeah. she said, of course she said she was fine. She does that with me, but you're supposed to
That's
be
her
a
trick.
Yeah.
That's what she does. I've got a friend who lost her mum recently, and her dad has dementia, but he has sort of not like immediately serious dementia. So she's struggling to get help for him because he kind of can remember stuff, but then he really can't remember other stuff. And so they got him to the memory clinic, and she, you know, she's like, he's amazing. So he went in and was like, oh, I think I know what I'm doing here. And he kind of answered the questions and charmed them all, and they left going, I think he's fine. She was like, wow, like, he's a really good actor, isn't he? That was an incredible performance. And you all believed it, because she, I think when you see the everyday of someone, it's very different, isn't it? But again, if someone's putting up that I'm fine, how do you, without being like, you're lying, which is not helpful. You know,
no, in a way, I kept on thinking it sort of comes down to respecting another person's personal philosophy.
Mm.
My mum's philosophy was always very different from my dad's and mine. I think I've inherited many of my dad's more downbeat ways of thinking about life. And I'm a worrier. And my mum was sort of the opposite. She didn't want to worry about things, and her technique was to ignore them. Ignore them?
Mm.
Ignore them. And so she would just ignore anything she didn't like the look of, and just get on with it, and more or less bury her head in the sand and have fun. And, you know, it served her really pretty well, that way of dealing with things. She had a good time. She was way more upbeat and happy and full of laughter than my dad ever was.
Mm.
But she didn't live as long as my dad. And I think part of that reason is that she, you know, that philosophy can only carry you so far, and the drawback to it is that it will often mean that you don't deal with things that you ought to deal with, or that it might be wise to deal with.
It's really, that's what I mean, but I think what you said earlier is really interesting, to respect someone's philosophy, because if that is someone's philosophy and that is how they've lived their life, and that is how they've ended up with their, you know, where they are in that point with that house and that husband, and that, like, that's guided them all the way, that will also affect their death.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really sometimes not talked about enough. I've said on the show before, but like, so my dad was a very like full-on person, like lived life to the full, you know, really like run marathons, run triathlons, I'm gonna do this. And when he died, he really refused to talk about it. He was dying, he was like, no, we're gonna go here next week. Book a ticket for Boston. You know, and like, I remember sitting in the cancer ward, like basically the dying ward, with him being like, yeah, next week we'll do this. And me and my mum being like, this is awkward. Like, we're not doing that. And I used to feel so frustrated by that. And it's taken me some therapy to be like, that's how he lived. So that's how he died. You can't sort of stop someone being them. You can't be like, no, now you have to have a conversation where you face your life and you talk to me and you admit you're dying, because he would never admit he's wrong ever. And I think to him, it was like, no, I'm not dying. Excuse me. No, we can talk our way out of this. So yeah, I think that with your mum, like you said, if she had suddenly changed her philosophy, then yeah, maybe it wouldn't have fitted who she was as a person. But obviously you're still left with those feelings of being her son and the sadness of not being able to help in the way that you did try to. So it's like that, those two things exist at the same time. She had to live like that, and you have to live with now what's happened. So it's really hard balance.
It is. Although it definitely took the edge off some of the guilt and the angst afterwards, you know, which you feel whatever, I think. However it goes down, you feel somewhat responsible. So basically, it became clear to me that she was struggling. And there was a whole load of other bits and pieces going on that were kind of weird. Like there was some tradesman who'd done some work, and it was pretty clear that he'd ripped her off, and he was taking advantage of her, as far as I could tell.
Yeah.
And it was the most awful feeling, because this was right in the midst of the lockdown.
Oh, God.
In the strictest part. That whole Dominic Cummings story was everywhere, and people were like, fuck you, man. It's not one rule for you and one rule for everybody else. And I was thinking, shit, you know, I want to go and scoop mum up, but it's not one rule for me and one rule for everybody else. And then eventually it became clear to me that this was an emergency. And as far as I could tell, well, that changed the situation. So I went and got her and thought, okay, well, she can stay with us.
Did you have that conversation with her? Did you sort of say, right, I'm coming to get you? Or
eventually, yeah, because eventually she was like, someone found her wandering around in Waitrose, all confused, you know. I think it was a good Samaritan, and they got her back to her house. I mean, it was really upsetting and maddening, because I didn't know if it was a good Samaritan or someone who was burgling her, or I didn't know what was going on. And it was all filtered through my mum's hazy grasp of what was happening in her bad memory and who everyone was and all this kind of thing. So I just thought, well, this is mad. And anyway, I think it was a good Samaritan, and she phoned and said, look, I'm here with your mum. And she was a bit confused. And Waitrose, I got her back, and I said, hey, mum, who's that there with you? And she was like, oh, I think it's someone who's come to do some cleaning. That's nice, isn't it? And I was like, yeah, that's great. I didn't know you had a cleaner. Anyway, I was like, okay, I'm going to come and get you now.
Yeah.
And even then she said, well, don't come and get me today, because it's not convenient. Come and get me tomorrow. And I was like, all right. Anyway, so I turned up, and she was just in a bad way. And it was clear that she had just been robotically going through her daily routines.
Yeah.
Even though she had all sorts of stuff that was wrong, and a kind of kidney infection and various other effects of the cancer, and hadn't been taking medication and was very thin. And so she was in a bad way. And, but she'd just been keeping on with her routines, going to the shops, buying all the things, taking them home, but she wasn't eating anything. So the fridge was all just stuffed with food that was all going off. And, you know, she liked a glass of wine of an evening. So there was just bottles of wine everywhere, but none of them had been drunk. And, oh man, it was bad. And I just thought, okay. So I just did a quick clean of the house, and then I said, come on, let's go, and bundled her into the car and got back home. But when I got home, my wife was like, whoa, she is not doing well. And so the next day we went into hospital, and I was hoping that the doctors were going to say, okay, she's just a bit run down, and here's what you need to do. But they admitted her, and she was there for 3 days, and then they said, okay, well, she's okay to come out now. But it's so weird and mysterious, the whole process of doctors and hospitals, and they don't know everything. They're kind of guessing a lot of the time, and maybe they're not telling you certain things that, you know, this, maybe they're not telling you when there's not much they can do. I don't know. It's you're kind of trying to figure out, put all the pieces together. Anyway, she came back, but she was in a very weakened state, and the next night she was home, she died. And I was sat up with her all night, you know, because she was in a bad way and she was complaining of pains in her stomach and things like that. And it was terrible, because I didn't know how to alleviate that pain, that particular pain. I was phoning up the NHS and asking if I should give her painkillers. They were like, oh no, probably not.
So you had no like care or anything, no one, palliative care or anything like that? Oh, they hadn't really said to you,
no,
you need palliative care? God.
No, they just sort of sent her home.
Oh man.
But I phoned, you know, I was really worried, and so I spent the whole of the first day phoning up the GP and trying to get an appointment there. And we were going to see the GP the next day. but she didn't make it.
Oh, Adam, that's so quick. It's so quick.
Yeah, I think she was just, so duffed in.
Mm.
But she was a trooper, so she kind of carried on. But I just think in the state she was, it just didn't really take much to tip her over.
And, well, and I talked on the show before about, like, the body. We sometimes get very linear with the body, but actually it's like it's a cobweb. So, like, when one thing is not working, it's affecting another thing. And, like, actually all these things can contribute to somebody being very ill. And, I mean, I've been astonished by stories of the way that someone very ill can keep going until someone... until someone realizes, you know, that feeling of like, hang on, this person isn't okay. And they're like, no, I'm not, am I? But they've, you know, they've been to the shops that day. They've literally seen friends and people have... The human will to just, like you said, keep your... do those routines is...
yeah,
like is
the Duracell bunny. You're just kind of bumping up against the wall, like, even as you're running down.
But, like, thank God that you did go and scoop her up. Like, that you did go and get her and she was with you. That's
yeah, no, it would have been... way worse. That was the thing thought. I imagined what it would have been like if I'd got a call from the cops or something, or from a neighbour, and she was on her own. Ay, ay, ay. I wouldn't have been able to deal with that. Mm. And it was a comfort to remind myself that she was where she wanted to be, and she got into that state because she was determined to be independent. She liked where she lived. She liked the village and the people around her. She liked going for a walk through the churchyard every day where she's now buried, and she'd walk down to the river, and she was upset and confused by the lockdown and the fact that everyone was keeping their distance, and she didn't quite have her head round it, really.
She was just
soldiering on.
So you spent that night with her, and then you said she passed away the next day, is that right?
She passed away that night. So she was just getting worse and worse in the night, and I was really worried about her. And I was thinking, I don't know what to do. And then I just got very worried, and I phoned the ambulance. And then they came over, and they run through their whole routine of... because I'm still in the mindset of, okay, she's bad, she's weak, she's been in hospital for a few days, she just needs some looking after, then she's going to bounce back. She was 81. So, I mean, that's old, but it's not ancient. Anyway, my dad was 91 when he died.
Wow.
So I was thinking, I had that fixed in my head as an unreasonably as a, oh, everyone lives to 91.
Yeah.
You know, even though that's a long time. Anyway, the what are they called? EMTs, the emergency medical tech guys, they turn up in their ambulance with their machines and their shock pads and their gurneys and everything. And it's a little bit like having your house raided by some special branch of the cops. You know, they were nice, but they're in EMT mode. So they're not going, how are you doing? Would you like a cup of tea? Is everything's going to be okay? Don't worry. They're just like, where do we go? Right, step back. We are going to do our things. And they're sort of chatting technical jargon to each other. And then they sort of go through the disclaimer, like, okay, you appreciate that. You know, do you want us to revive her if she stops breathing? I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Well, we should say that from looking at her, it looks unlikely that she would survive resuscitation. And there is a chance when we take her down to the ambulance that she will die in transit. Are you aware of that? Are you okay with that? They weren't saying this brutally. I'm making it sound like they were being callous. They weren't.
Yeah.
They were just going through their checklist.
What they have to say.
Exactly. In an efficient way as possible. And I was just like, yeah, fine, you know, whatever.
Just do the thing. Just do it.
Yeah. I was like, okay, you know, I was packing a bag to go to hospital. I was like, here we go. It's going to be hospital time now for the next few days, weeks, whatever. And so they get her on the gurney. Meanwhile, my ma's sort of in and out of lucidity. I mean, she's pretty much gone by that point, but she's still conscious. But she's pulling away at the mask, the oxygen mask. Mm. I'm like, no, Mum, keep the mask on. But she's not really chatting, and she's not really saying anything. anyway, they put her on the, they strap her to the gurney and they lift her up and take her downstairs. But she, and they put her in the back of the ambulance, and we're stood out there, me and my wife, and then he says, I'm afraid her heart stopped.
Oh, Adam.
Yeah. And so it's like, oh shit, that happened. They said it might, and it has. And it's a really bad moment. You're like, whoa, hang on a second. Now this is a nightmare. They said it was, I didn't think that was a realistic possibility.
Yeah, you just thought you would, like, terms and conditions apply. Yes, yes,
exactly.
Yes,
sure, yeah, sure, yeah. And so then it's like your mind is reeling, and it's all these weird thoughts are zipping through, you know, like, oh my God, she's gone. And, oh no, I let her down. And, oh shit, maybe she'd still be alive if I didn't go and pick her up from her home. And all these stuff, like in milliseconds, you're processing. And then memories, happy memories and sad memories, and then sort of weird, very practical calculations like, oh, I'd kind of mapped out the rest of this year and possible next few years as mum's going to be living with us and we're going to be looking after her. And now that's not going to happen. And, oh, I suppose that leaves me with a bit more time for DIY. But, you know, all these kind of strange thoughts are going through, and you're processing them and you're dimly aware of some of them. And I was thinking, shit, my brother and sister are going to think that I killed her. they're going to be thinking, oh, why did, it's all about you and your big house in the country, isn't it? Why don't you just leave well enough alone? Oh, she was fine. God. And now you've brought her out to Norfolk and you killed her. So fuck you.
Totally,
you're not getting any Christmas presents.
Totally relate to being a sibling. And that's like, oh God, I was in charge when that thing happened. Like, oh no. Like,
yeah.
Oh shit. I'm going to get shit for this, aren't I? Like,
oh man.
But of course,
it was
like,
so strange.
So then she was just in the ambulance. Like, what? Such a. And also, I really, 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 really feel for you, because this is a difficult situation anyway, normal life. But this in lockdown, when it's like, and May was like still pretty serious lockdown, you know, I just, yeah, like what, how did the process then happen? Because I'm also wondering, which maybe is not a helpful thought, but like, would you have been sent home like that if it hadn't been lockdown? Would social services been in touch quickly? It's so, everything's been on such a weird plane of existence that when you're trying to do things, I guess, like, you know, have a wedding, deal with someone dying, like everything's all skewed and bizarre and not working in the way it's meant to. So what happened afterwards?
Yeah, it was all very odd. I mean, I definitely feel as if, you know, all right, she was going to be in trouble anyway for various reasons, but the lockdown was a disaster for her. And she definitely slipped through the cracks in that way. And it was strange having the EMT guys in our house, because it was like, oh, these were the first people we'd seen since the lockdown began, you know, a couple of months or something. You know, it was all social distancing and all that. But it was very, it was so strange. Anyway, so they take her to the hospital. Then they do the autopsy and the coroner's report and all that stuff. And then it was a question of arranging the funeral, which was in the town where she lived. And I think they said that we were allowed 11 people at that point.
Yeah, I think it went up, but yeah, it was about 12 or 11 for ages,
right,
wasn't it?
So it was my cousins and my brother and sister and my family. And actually, that was okay. It was again, the first time that we'd been out. I think by that time they had eased the lockdown a little bit. So you were allowed to travel, and it was nice to get out in a way. And it was a really miserable rainy day, but there was about half an hour of sunshine suddenly. So it was nice that funeral experience was okay, but everything around it was just mad and felt overwhelming. And it was much sadder than when my dad died, because I spoke to you about that last time. that was all expected because he'd been with us. He was ill, he had cancer, and we were fairly well aware of his prognosis, and he kind of conformed to it more or less. And he was with us for 9 months, and by the end of it, it was like, okay, we know what's coming. And there was a part of me that felt relieved when it was over, you know. But with my mum, it was so quick and sudden, and I really didn't expect it. And then it's like, oh, both of them are gone, and you feel like, oh, I'm all alone. And I'm 51, and oh, shit, this is, it's all downhill now. That's the end of the fun part. Like, I'm the next one to go. So you get all these feelings, you know, all these kind of midlife crisis-y feelings rushing in.
My mum lost both her parents in 2 weeks of each other.
Oh, right.
About a year before my dad, which at the time I never really took on board, but now as an adult, I'm like, that is awful. But she said, and my husband's lost both his mum and his dad, and she actually said, I remember her saying to him when it happened, she was like, you suddenly feel the most alone you've ever felt.
Yeah.
Like, you do, it's crazy, feel because alone.
Because I'm not alone.
No.
I've got a family. I've got children. I've got a dog. I've got friends, even though they're socially distanced.
Yeah. But I think
remote,
there's something
on Zoom.
Yeah. It's something primal about the people who made you not being there
anymore.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
And my husband said this, Ben said that he was like, weirdly, it's the most free I've ever felt. Mm-hmm. Because I don't have anybody to make proud or judge or any of that thing is gone. But
you can
also
go out, you can come back whenever you want. You can wear that ridiculously short skirt. You can go out
looking
like
that.
Yeah.
But he said, like, he was like, you're suddenly aware of like how much you are always thinking of them, how much you had been thinking of them in your life. So it's sort of freeing in one way that obviously he was absolutely devastated when his mum died. They were very close. And he was like, but weirdly, I've spent a lot of my time, you know, wanting her to be proud and that process and the complicated parent-child relationship. But also I feel so alone. Now I don't have that conversation anymore. It's like, it's still internal, obviously. But yeah, to lose both of them. And it really wasn't that long ago you lost your dad, to be fair. Like, so yeah, 4 years ago. That's no time.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. I mean, it feels odd to be... I realise, like, shit, everyone goes through this, you know, hopefully they outlive their parents. But it suddenly made me think about the people, my friends, who had lost their parents. And one friend in particular, whose dad died when she was only in her 20s. And I remember at the time, even then, my relationship with my parents had become quite formal and we weren't especially close. And in your 20s, you're all kind of pumped up with independence and like, I can do anything I want and fuck everybody else. And well, that was me anyway. I was pretty selfish and bent on just making myself happy. And I didn't think about my parents too much. And I remember when my friend's dad died and she was absolutely devastated. I remember thinking like, chill out. It's only your dad. Come on. He was old anyway, like, dads are boring.
Oh, yeah.
And then,
if you're not in the club, you don't know. You don't know. Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, okay.
Oh.
Even if she loved her dad as well. So, holy shit, it must have been awful. I'm not saying I didn't love my parents, but she was very close to them.
Yeah,
and, yeah, now just thinking about, even if you have a pretty shitty relationship with your parents, when they're gone, I think it is just very strange. It's a strange feeling, primal feeling of loss, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And as I said, combined with your mum dying very suddenly, even though you said there were these things, I think also sometimes when people have things, but they've been sort of coping, you go into a bit of a place where you're like, oh, they're someone who survives things. Like your brain does that, like, you know, they're not someone who got ill and then they died. They got cancer, then that was it. They're like, they had cancer and they did okay. So yeah, I think that'd be all right. And you all kind of get into that, yeah, they survive. That's what they do. So then it's hard when someone like that, like you said, then is mortal, because your brain is like, oh, no, that's not, she's someone who just, like you said, keeps going, troops on. Yeah. And for them to suddenly, for the MT people to suddenly say that to you, must have been really, yeah, really shocking.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd. I've spoken to someone else who lost their dad in lockdown, who again wasn't COVID related, was ill before, and she said, I don't know how you feel about this, she said that she really appreciated the quiet that she had to think about it, because normally she'd be gigging and she'd be out, and but I don't know, sometimes, because this was obviously your second parent to go, did you appreciate the kind of time you've had to think, or were you actually like, I would really love some work right now to not be thinking about this?
I think probably that.
Yeah.
I think more and more, in fact, the longer this situation continues, that I am not doing that well with this routine, and that I miss people really badly. It really did feel like, oh shit, I'm sliding into something bad and lonely here. And rather than being someone who, like my ma, she would have distracted herself in some effective way, but I kind of dive right into it. And so first of all, I was going through all her possessions, because that's one thing, you know, we went and did a pass on her house and kind of took out most of the valuable personal items and photo albums and things like that. So I went through all her photographs and things and all this stuff that I'd never seen before, and this part of her life, her young life before she met my dad and had a family that she never talked about. She never told us about. My parents never told us anything about what their lives were like before we came along. You know, I think they sort of thought that they had to maintain that fiction that they didn't exist before they met each other. You know what I mean? They were always our mummy and daddy.
Yeah, yeah.
But of course they weren't. They had their own lives. They went out with other people. They had different personalities. And you know, you find all these clues and these bits of evidence of a person just like you, someone who was stupid sometimes and silly and selfish and made dirty jokes. And it was very absorbing for me. I just kind of fell into this rabbit hole of reading bits and pieces and old letters and diaries that she'd kept and looking through photographs and like, whoa, look at all that. I never realized that she'd done that. Or she used to be I knew that she was a flight attendant.
Oh, wow.
And that's how she met my dad. But I'd
very
never...
Very glamorous at that time.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah. It was like being a model or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd never seen any evidence of it, though. I only had her word for it that she... Anyway, so I found all these photographs of her and her gear and all the places that she'd traveled and hanging out with these kind of sleazy-looking pilots. And
oh, my God, amazing. And
yeah, it was crazy. But at the same time, you know, I would then I would find photographs of us all together when we were little.
Mm.
And those hurt.
Mm.
Just thinking, oh, shit, man. It's all gone, you know. But, I mean, it was good as well. And it reminded me how much I loved her. But it did make me feel like, fuck, I do wish I'd said more.
Mm.
I'm sorry.
No, don't be silly. Sorry. It's the show for it. Don't worry.
Yeah. Oh, dear. That's the other thing is that... is that my old man crying voice is now totally out of control. It really doesn't... There's nothing I can do about it now.
But you're in such a... You're being such a raw position right now. Like, this is so fresh. And plus the insanity of lockdown. Like, I don't think anyone is doing that well at the moment because we're, you know, what we're living through is unprecedented, insane.
Yeah.
And, you know, I keep thinking about my grandparents when they would talk about war stories, and I'd have that slightly like, oh right, yeah, interesting, like my granny was in the Blitz in East End, all right, yeah. And now you're like, God, I had no idea what it was like to, like, you know, when you're actually living through something that's insane and you can't comprehend it. And, you know, the times we're living in, obviously, yeah, we're not getting bombs aren't raining down on us, but it's a very, very bizarre time. So I completely understand what you're, you know, what you're having to deal with grief right now. It's really hard. It's hard.
It is hard, yeah. Because the world feels so crazy, and because there's so much shit going down, and so many people, you know, we're trying to make these huge adjustments and accommodations, and we're trying to be more thoughtful, and we're trying to be kinder to each other. But at the same time, there's such a massive wave of pushback and alarm in various forms that go along with all of those revolutions.
Definitely. And we were talking on the Griefcast Twitter a lot, like early start of lockdown. I was like, any griefs is finding this a bit griefy? Like, this feels a bit like it reminded me of grief, this kind of,
yeah,
this sense of loss. And I had a lot of responses. People were like, yeah, I'm, you know, from old griefs were like, oh, I'm 20 years in and this has brought up so much stuff. And what got me, I don't know, it's different to everyone. When my dad died, I remember looking out the window and seeing people acting normal and being like, fuck you with your life. Like, how are you existing? This thing has happened. And I was so angry at people who could go to a shop or like have a life. And then what I learned through 20 years is that like world out your window that you can't deal with is actually really useful because it keeps showing you every day, life goes on, life goes on, life goes on. And eventually you kind of jump back into that river. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh yeah, I can have a normal day. I can live. I can be okay. Now, what's happening at the moment is it's like reflected at, like the world outside is reflecting how you feel. And that's not mm-hmm. right. Like you're feeling like, I want the clocks to stop. I want everything. I've got all this sadness. And you're looking outside and fucking everyone is like, yeah, me too. And yeah. It's like, there's nobody being like, hey, we're at the pub and it's fine. Come down, forget, distract. So you're like, yeah. Oh, I don't. It's so fun. I find it very strange because I remember feeling so, I wanted everybody to stop for a second and appreciate that this life was too precious. And now they are doing it. I'm like, I liked it when you were all talking about, you know, EastEnders and drinking. go back. And I do think, you know,
yeah,
it's really hard. It's like someone described it as trauma on top of trauma to be grieving what you're going through right now in this time. It's really, 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 really challenging.
It's the isolation is bad for someone like me because, as I said, you know, I tend to sort of dive into things. I want to make connections with people who feel the same way that I do. But I don't want to just ring up friends or just, you know, my wife is so lovely and kind and so are my children and they've been great. But you reach a point where you just don't want to, I don't want to be just crying guy the whole time. It feels that you know I know no one, I hope no one is sort of judging me for it, but I also feel like come on mate, you slightly got to get a grip and you've slightly got to just cheer up to a certain degree, you know what I mean?
Like, I just think you're being...
I'm not saying I'm not giving myself too hard a time about it.
Yeah, you sound like you are. As a second-time guest, I'm going to be like more on a friend term with you. Because like normally I'd be like, yeah. I think you're being really hard. Like it was like, what is it? It's September. Fucking hell. Like that's no time. That's no time. And I think you're forgetting what happens with grief is you do have this feeling like 3-4 months in when you're like, I need to get and sort myself out. And actually, a year in, you're like, why was I rushing this process?
Yes.
Like, it takes its time. If you're crying guy for the moment, that's fine. You're not going to be crying guy forever. Like, you know that with grief. You will not
stay
crying.
As long as you're absolutely sure about that, that's fine. No, I'm joking. But
I think so. I don't think you stay in that.
You're right. You know. But the way that I deal with it sometimes, which might not be healthy, is that I find, you know, this is when art becomes very important for someone like me. And so I go and seek out perspectives and ways that people express themselves that I can relate to in this, you know, when I'm in this place. And so sometimes that's good and uplifting. Like with music's hard, man. Holy shit, because music is like turning on a tap.
Yeah.
And you can't hold the feelings back associated with a piece of music. So it's very dangerous. I found myself sitting down listening to music one evening when everyone had gone to bed, and a song came on that my mum really loved. Randy Crawford, Someday I'll Fly Away.
Oh yeah.
Which I really like too. But I realized that when I used to listen to it, a little part of me used to think, shit, one day this song is going to be hard to listen to after Mars gone.
Yeah.
And then there it was. It was on shuffle and it popped into my headphones. And my instinct was to stop it because I thought, I can't deal with this. Because suddenly the lyrics were like, oh my God, this is like, she's talking to me. Someday I'll fly away. You know, what was it? Leave
this
dreams
world
for
behind,
yesterday.
Isn't it? Or something?
Yeah. It's all, it seemed to me like, oh, gee, this is all about mum. And so I thought, I can't listen to this. But then I thought, mate, come on. And so I challenged myself. Mm-hmm. It felt frightening. It felt like, I'm going to come apart. If I listen to this, this is freaking me out. But then I thought, come on, you got to make it to the end of Someday I'll Fly Away. And I did. So I thought, oh, well, that was good. And I started seeing a therapist.
I was going to say, have you?
Because I did think, like, this is no good. I need to talk to someone.
Yeah.
And so one of the first things that she said was, because I was getting sort of flashbacks of the night that she died.
Of course.
And my technique was just to go la 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 and then block them out, you know. So, yeah. I don't want to, no. And she said, no, don't do that. You've got to try and sit with them and let them happen. I was like, really? What's the point of that?
Also, it's like, have you met a comedian? That's not what we do. We do not sit with the uncomfortable. We break the uncomfortable. Now everyone's happy. Yay.
Like, that's right.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Like,
that's what my therapist
says. Why is that good?
She's always like, why try and sit with it? I don't want to fucking sit with it.
Yeah. So she said, well, when those thoughts come into your head, just don't immediately push them out. And I said, why? What's to be gained? And she said, well, then you'll realize that they're not going to kill you. And they become less frightening to you. I suppose that's true. And that's quite good. And I was able to do it with Someday I'll Fly Away, and I've been able to do it with a few of the kind of flashback memories. So it's actually been getting better and easier from day to day. I know it doesn't sound like it from the way I've been speaking.
No, it does,
I haven't spoken about it for a few, for a while. And the other thing though is that is maybe not healthy is that I've taken a deep dive into the world of Charlie Kaufman.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Maybe, okay. So have you told your therapist? Have you let her know?
We're going to chat about it.
So she's aware
of
what she's
week.
Up with. Yeah, yeah. She, give her a heads up. So she's like, okay, that's where Adam's
I'm
at.
I'm going to ask her if she's, I don't know if she's seen Synecdoche, New York, but.
Oh my God.
Have you seen that?
Yeah, I haven't seen it for years, but I remember being like, oh my fucking God, what just happened to me after I
it's
came out?
It's a massive bummer.
Yeah, it's really. Isn't it Philip Seymour Hoffman?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's Philip Seymour Hoffman, and it's.
Even
it's
more
a kind
sad.
Of crazy Charlie Kaufman-esque rumination on everything bad.
Yes.
Death and deterioration and time running out.
And they go and look at a house, don't they? And the house is like, he's like standing in front of a house. It's like crumbling or something. They're like just talking
it's
about
it. It's on fire. So one of the characters goes round to look at a house with the real estate agent.
Yes.
And there's smoke billowing out of the house. And, you know, if you haven't seen a Charlie Kaufman film before, listeners, his stuff is often quite surreal. He was the guy that wrote Being John Malkovich. Yeah. And so there's a lot of absurdism and strange, surreal elements that creep into a lot of his stuff. And dreamlike, strange business. It's really an extraordinary film, but it is... depressing. It's really pretty depressing.
And it doesn't... I remember it's relentless and you're watching it thinking, in a minute he's going to like take his foot off the gas and he'll give me something. And then it ends and you're like, what?
Yeah.
You did not... No, come on. I wanted the scene at the end where like they're laughing over a glass of wine.
Exactly.
It's okay.
But let's not forget that these are the things that make life so wonderful.
Yeah, that's
and it's
what
not
life
all
is.
Bad.
Yeah, no.
And actually...
and he leaves you in the... the shit bit where you're like, oh, I think you've missed the last five pages of that script where
you missed the fun parts.
Yeah, that's fine. So you're in,
So I'm in Synecdoche. I'm in Synecdoche mode. It's really an interesting, fascinating film, albeit a colossal fucking bummer. And the thing is that the other thing is though, you know, because I'm if I'm going to watch a film that's dealing with life and death, then I would rather watch Groundhog Day, which has also got Groundhog Day's got as much, if not more, truth in it than Synecdoche, New York. This
is
the thing.
Groundhog Day is based on the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross Five Stages of Grief. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, so, because I'm writing about this at the moment. Fun times, writing about grief in a pandemic, guys. The guy who wrote it, I'm sorry, I've forgotten his name, but Harold Ramis directed it, and basically they were very into psychology and, you know, that sort of, you know, how people work, despite it being a comedy film, and they took the five stages of grief, so denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance, or whatever it is, and they applied it. So that's what he goes through. So the first time he's doing it, like he's like, oh, I'm in denial, it's not happening to me. Then he gets angry, he punches Ned Meyerson. Like, I have a whole chapter on this, so I don't want to get it
too
much. Bing!
Yeah.
Pre-order. And it's entirely based on the idea that five stages of grief. And weirdly, when you watch it, knowing that, it becomes a film about death. In a really weird way. When I was a kid, I was like, what a funny film. He gets stuck in a day. And now I'm like, this film is about death. This film is, the whole thing is about dying. Like, it's not, it's really a weird, weird lost 90s film, I think it is, isn't it? Or late 80s, where it takes a long perspective to be like, this is probably more of a bummer than Synecdoche, New York, but they've just remembered to put in the fun bits. Like,
yeah. Here's some facts for you. Groundhog Day,
1993. Oh, yes.
Written by Danny Rubin.
Danny Rubin, that's it. And I've also been, the other thing I've been reading, which I think might be interesting, is this like new grief theory, because obviously Kubler-Ross is like the traditional one, but it's bullshit in my opinion. But this, the more sort of accepted theory now is that you have to go through, you have to oscillate between the two different types of grief. So you need the grieving, the wailing, the crying, being the crying man, looking at the photos, going into that deep dive, and then you need what they call restoration. But when I was in my early grief, I would have called, like, I would have felt guilty about, like, so you need like the watching crap, the watching comedy, the like just not thinking about it, complete distraction. And they actually fully recommend you should be jumping between these two phases.
Okay.
Which I remember thinking at the time, like, oh, I feel so guilty, I'm not, you know, I'm at school and I'm not thinking about it, I must be a bad person. And actually reading all this stuff, it's like, no, that's how humans process. If you stay too much in the deep dive, you can't give your brain a break to go, that happened. And if you're in too much in the distraction, you're not processing. But that's mm-hmm. how humans do it. We go in the emotion, we cry, we feel sad, then we go and distract and we eat ice cream and we forget about it. And actually, when you're doing the not deep dive, you're processing. Your brain is going, oh, that happened, didn't it? Just because you're not thinking about it, your brain is like, ah, they're dead. Okay. And you have to keep doing it to yourself because your brain will keep being like, are they? Is death real? What does that mean? So I think that's a really interesting, certainly when I read about it, I was like, oh, that really takes a lot of guilt away, how we grieve, because it's like, that's what you're meant to be doing. You're meant to be jumping between these two states and not walking around dressed in black wailing. Like, I think sometimes we hold like, that's good grieving, isn't it? Like, that's proper if you're just like really sad all the time.
And yeah, respectful.
Respectful, yeah.
That's what they would have wanted. They would have wanted me to be wandering around crying all the time.
Exactly. And I just thought, I was like, oh, that's interesting that actually that's fully not what they recommend for health.
Yeah.
Is it bereavement counselling or is it therapy?
You know what? I don't exactly know.
I don't know what my therapist does either. I'm like, she talks to me. Yeah.
I got a recommendation from someone I really like. And she said, talk to this woman. She helped me. I was like, fine, I'll talk to her. And it was a few sessions before I did actually say, like, so what are you going to fix me? Or are you just going to ask me how I feel a lot? And I think she's an asking me how I feel a lot person.
Okay, great.
But every now and again, I do, like the other day, what was it she said? She was talking about, like, are you lonely? I was like, yeah. Mm. And she said, oh, that makes me sad.
That's nice.
Yeah, I know. I thought it was weird because I was like, that felt like a bit of a judgment.
Yeah, mine doesn't say anything like that. She's like, are you interesting? And I'm like, oh, God, I wish she'd say something nice.
So when she said, that makes me sad, I was like, oh, should I not be lonely? I said, like, isn't everyone lonely? But I mean, aren't they?
Aren't we all just marching towards death? I mean, who's not lonely? They should be in here.
I'm asking seriously now. Isn't everyone a bit lonely?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't.
You can't ever really know people.
But I don't want to. I mean, this is the thing. I'm too much in. I'm too much in Charlie Kaufman world.
I feel like if I was in your house as a member of your family, I'd definitely have like a Kaufman watch. Like, I'd be like, you've had one. And then I'd be coming in after one. I'd be going, are you going to bed now? Because I feel like I'm that annoying person. I'd be like, yeah, I've got to probably turn the telly off now. Which I think
that's enough, Charlie Kaufman, for you. You've been stuck in front of that all day. Now,
I've had it up to here with Kaufman. Just go outside and play. You need some fresh air. But you know, that also, I also do really validate, like, whatever works. And I think sometimes, especially if you've been through grief before, like, you do know what you need. I think that's important to trust that, of like, and also you're self-aware enough to go, yeah, Kaufman's a bummer. Okay, I am watching it. Okay, I'm aware of that. Like, some people would be like, no, it's absolutely fine. Nothing wrong with that. Don't we talking about? So I think having that self-awareness of what am I doing while I'm grieving? Mm-hmm. And I definitely didn't have that with my dad. I can't say that if it was my first death or I was 15. But I had a friend died during lockdown, very suddenly, young lady. And I was just like, proper like, ow, fuck.
Oh, man.
Grief.
Yeah.
And I had a couple of weeks where I was like, oh, fuck, can't cope. What is this? And then again, I was like, Sand, what you're saying, I was able to go, okay, you know what you're doing. Like, take a step back. This is grief. Look at it. It's grief. It's grief. It's not we're all alone or the world is over or you can't trust anything. Like, I get the full anxiety. Like, nothing is safe. And I was like, okay, it's just grief. And I'm just going to have to sit with it for a bit. And I think that's what you can hope, really, from learning as a human and having these experiences and deaths, is that you learn a little bit each time how to process it and what your process is. And if your process is Charlie Kaufman on repeat, you know, I'd suggest for the next lockdown, you like you find like something to match it, you know? So you have a Kaufman and then you watch like a screwball comedy.
Yeah, no, I do.
Yeah, good.
But sometimes it's funny, like sometimes I find myself typing into Google, things that are uplifting. Like what do I get? I can't remember what the hits are. I mean, you don't get many good hits. You get a lot of bullshit, really.
Yeah. But
I tell you what's been working for me.
Oh yeah.
And it's good for my family because they like it too. Is just Ramesh. I just watch Misadventures of Ramesh Ranganathan. He did those shows, the best of shows, which I've noticed. Well, Louis did some as well. Like that's the new trend in TV is just repackage old shows and then do a few Zoom interviews. But Ramesh,
if you love someone enough, you don't mind, do you? Like I'm just happy to spend time with Ramesh.
Exactly. So he went back and the part of the genius of his show, Misadventures of Ramesh Ranganathan, which is this travel show he does, is he goes to these places like Albania and the Sahara and they hook him up with these local people who are his guides, and they're so great though, the people that they find. And so he was back in touch with them and having these Zoom calls.
Oh, nice.
And it was really, it really cheered me up. It was great. Things that
are uplifting.
Uplifting.
What do you get? One result.
You get 25 fun, uplifting things to do by yourself. Go for a walk. Go for a walk in nature.
I've done that every day for fucking 6 months, mate.
That's good. I agree with that. That's fine. And that is, you know, time spent with Rosie going for a walk has definitely been, is always happy and healthy. Hug a tree. They are true soul healers. This is the top hit for things that are uplifting. Rearrange your wardrobe and discover old clothes again. Simplify your life.
Oh, God.
Get rid of old clutter. Donate your clothes to a donation center.
Oh, God. But it's all very...
Visit a museum. Meditate for 10 minutes. Take a bubble bath. Start a herb garden. That's what my wife did.
Yeah, I got into gardening big time. Man. And I love that quote. If you plant a garden, it means you believe in the future.
There you go.
Oh, and that touched me. My heart was like, yes, this is what I'm doing. I am planting things and I'm growing things to cope with this. Like,
yeah,
it's, but whatever gets you through, like if it's Ramesh and then a Kaufman to tip off your, that's your whiskey at the end of the night.
What else have we got on this list?
Oh, God.
Oh yeah, we got some good stuff here. Eat several bags of chili and sour cream crisps on the go. What? masturbate regularly. Okay. drink excessively in the middle of the night.
Scroll through Instagram to find people more happy and successful than you. Compare yourself. Look really closely. Yeah, how nice is their house? How clean are their children? Do they
read extensively about the QAnon movement.
Yeah, I can recommend turning off any form of media information. That's what I did for a few weeks. I was like, oh, you know what? I just can't take anything. I just had a week when I was like, I'm just going to, garden. And the other massive thing I've been reading about is being creative after grief. That's seen as one of the best. I'm trying to write about it. And I'm like, what is it? Obviously, it's creating when there's been a removal of life. But the biggest advice is do something with your hands. Obviously, that's when I read that, I was like,
yep. That's okay. Got that covered.
But they talk about knitting, gardening, baking, drawing, painting. And part of you is like, fucking hell, it's like Reader's Digest advice. Like it seems so basic.
Yeah.
But then everyone I speak to who has, so many people are like, it actively helps your brain process what you've been through. It's like the best thing to do for grief is to draw, to garden, to, you know, paint. And I always feel bad saying it because I feel like I don't want someone listening to be like, I can't do any of those things. But there is always something you can, you don't have to be good. You don't have to be good, yeah. I find myself, I get into deep dives badly and I just try now to be like, okay, I'm aware we're all alone. I'm aware we're all going to die. So I'm just trying to grab the snippets of joy when they appear. whack-a-mole, instead of whacking them, be like, grab that fucking mole, hold on to it. Because otherwise it's just a bit bleak, isn't it? It's just... if you can have that balance, but also caveat that massively with it's just happened to you. This is going to take time. And also I think it's hard going into winter. I don't know how you feel about that. Going into winter anyway.
Yeah, I don't like winter.
No, I'm not a massive fan.
I really do wish. Yeah, those are the times I really envy people who live in a hot climate and things like that. Yeah. You know? And longer days. You know, when the nights start drawing in, I just think, oh, you fucker. It's so great to have a long day. It doesn't get dark until after 9. You're like, yay, great times. But then, when it starts getting all gloomy, it's like, oh, no.
Yeah. But I think that's why I know a lot of people are doing this and think it's important to be like, okay, how are you going to survive? Like, what are you going to do in winter? Which, like, is such a primal thing that we are going to have to face this of like, right.
I'm going to collect some nuts and then I'm going to go to sleep.
And then have a wank.
I'm going to take care of my nuts and I'm going to stay in bed taking care of my nuts. That's what I'm going to do.
And then hopefully it'll be spring. Adam, on that note.
Yes.
Thank you so much for talking to me. It was
it's nice to talk to you, Carrie. It's one of the things that I look forward to is doing these podcasts and talking to other people on their podcasts. Yeah. And I worry about everything. I worry that I wang on too much, but I really appreciate the opportunity to do so with someone like yourself.
Oh, no, thank you. I really appreciate you coming on to talk to me. And what was your mum's name? We didn't get her name.
Her name was Valerie. And she was Chilean. Mm. So Spanish was her first language. And my dad used to call her Conchita, which means shell. And so it means little shell. And I always sort of thought in my mind, I processed that like, oh, that was his nickname for her. It was Shelley. But then I spoke to someone recently. This is the other thing, is that since my book came out, funny people from my past have been getting in touch, and some of my old relatives that I haven't spoken to for years and friends of my dad and my mum, they've been in touch, and they tell me stuff I never knew because I didn't really know that much. Mm. Anyway, turns out that my dad's nickname for my mum was just filth, and it was... you know, I guess you can work it out for yourself, like a kind of conch shell. What does that look like? Anyway,
oh, God.
It's a filthy present from the past.
Fuck it. Parents should not be allowed to do that. I think it's not fair that you can find out stuff and you're like, no, this is not. Guys,
but at the same time, it's like, okay, that's fine.
They were just humans.
Yeah.
Well, two... Valerie.
Yes.
To Valerie. Thank you for talking. Thank you for talking to me, Adam. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Carrie Ed.
The Adam Buxton podcast is available from wherever you get your podcasts from. If you haven't listened yet, what are you doing? Listen, it's incredible. It's one of the best podcasts out there. He also has a new book, Ramble Book, which I think is out now. They did it on Radio 4 as well, so you can listen to it if you have the BBC Sounds app. Other apps are available. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. The show was edited by Kate Holland. Music was provided by The Glue Ensemble. Artwork is by Jade Perkin, and I have been Carrie Lloyd. Thank you so much for listening. I hope that you have an okay week. And remember, you are not alone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.